Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome to the program. In case you don't know, this is a faith and values show that airs weekly that tries to intersect faith and values with different people, issues that are local or global. It's always a pleasure doing the show. Now for 20-plus years, we've been doing this, and thank you, people, for listening on a weekly basis. I'd like to also thank Ruth Chris Steakhouse and Perry's Fine Jewelry for their sponsorship of the show. Without you, I could not do this every single week. Well, when you hear the phrase 2020, a lot of people think, wow, the end of a decade, the beginning of a new decade. Some people think 2020 vision, it's time to focus for a new life and a new way of living. But when 2020 is spoken around our household, something that comes to mind is the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, Japan, this summer. They happen every 4 years. It's a wonderful event, something that captures the imagination of the world for 2 weeks. So I thought today it'd be a fun show as 2020 begins to have my son Michael on the show. Michael is a professional swimmer. He swam locally here at Charlotte Latin School at the University of Missouri. And believe it or not, and we'll talk more about this in the show, there is an international swim league that allows swimmers after college to keep swimming professionally. That's what he's doing, but also wants to try to make the Olympic team, if possible, this summer in 2020. Also joining me is my wife, Marilyn. She's going to talk about what it's like to be a swim mom, which is one of the more challenging and creative roles that any person can have with those early morning swim times that you got to get up and go practice. Michael, thanks for being with me today. Marilyn, it's good to have you both here on the show.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks, Dad.
Well, let's talk about professional swimming. I mean, when did you really think that swimming could be a part of your life?
I think, you know, for the longest time, swimming was kind of wishful thinking for me. I wasn't the best swimmer, as you guys know, growing up, but it was one of the things where I definitely locked in at a young age. Coming from a basketball family, I think long-term, that was kind of always my thing that I wanted to do. So basketball, just watching my brother David and watching you, Dad, have some real success in that sport. I think that's what made me stick with swimming for so long ultimately when, you know, I got cut from the seventh grade basketball team, and that kind of steered my path in a different way.
A rather traumatic moment for you, really.
It was, absolutely.
I had to go talk to the coach, and he said, well, he just didn't play very well this past week. And I went, oh, gosh. But that's what forced you to jump in the pool more seriously, didn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And that was a big thing is, you know, seventh grade is where I kind of attribute the time where I made the shift, kind of dedicated it a little bit, and ultimately said, you know, I want to swim in college. And swimming is a step-by-step thing like any sport. So that was the next step was, can I swim in college? Can I get a national cut to show coaches that, you know, I can do this thing long-term?
Yeah, and swimming, interestingly, not a part of our family much. Mom swam some when she was young, but swimming wasn't then like it is today. And yet that is something that you were able to focus on. And, you know, I've used this phrase a lot in my faith walk, and I know I've said it to you, Michael, is that disappointment is God's appointment. And had you made that basketball team in the seventh grade, you would never have jumped in the pool like you did and become the swimmer that you are.
Yeah, absolutely true. I mean, it was all part of a bigger plan. I mean, we all know that. And I think I could have been a decent basketball player, but my ceiling was definitely pretty low there. I mean, right now I'm about 6'6", and I'm nowhere near athletic enough to be able to play.
Well, you're not beastly either. These guys today are like 6'6", 250, you know, at your height, and they're animals, but you're thinner, and you're like 185, 190 pounds, correct?
Yeah. So, I mean,
but a swimmer's body for sure.
For sure. So I think that is what ultimately kept me and now being 24 years old makes me a good swimmer. You could say I have the textbook swimmer's build.
Yeah. You know, Marilyn, when we were growing up with Michael, we just remember the day that our next-door neighbor, Susan Flynn, said, I'll take him to the pool, and we'll throw him in the water and just let him have a fun day during the summertime. And for you, that was just, hey, good, get him out of the house for a while.
Give him something to do in the afternoons for a week. What we didn't know is that our good friend Leslie Behrens, who was the coach of that neighborhood team, whose son Ricky made it to the Olympics, saw Michael, and she cornered us after one of the meets and said, you guys might not know it. He was 10 at the time, but you have yourself a swimmer. And I remember you saying, well, what do you do with one of those?
So and she
helped
said,
coach
he
us. Yeah,
a feel for the water.
For the water. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting? She saw,
yeah,
like
she
I
saw
guess when you have a young
there.
Kid and you see a basketball touch.
Yeah, had a feel for the water.
A feel for the water as well.
Yeah.
When you jumped in that day, Michael, did you think that this would keep you going like it has today?
It'd take you around the world?
I mean, no, I don't think so at all. I think with swimming, especially when it was when I was nine at that summer league, there's such a you know, a feeling of almost helplessness that comes when you first jump in that water. So I think for me, I was honestly terrified for a few years just because it is something so ridiculously different than anything you've ever done. At least basketball, you know, you have a team, you can kind of play and understand the fundamentals, and it's kind of fun. I mean, basketball's a fun sport. I kind of always joke that swimming isn't necessarily the most fun sport in the world, but it teaches a lot of moral values and dedications and perseverance that ultimately made me fall in love with the sport at that young age and is the reason why I keep doing it.
That's my son, Michael. My wife, Marilyn, has a microphone, too. We're talking about his call to swim 2020 Olympic year. Let's talk about what all that means when we come back. I'm David Chadwick. We will be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. Fun show for me. I've been really looking forward to this. My son, Michael, is in studio with me. He's taking a break from swimming as he begins his focus now on the 2020 Olympic Games this summer. If he can make the team, he'll try out in Omaha, Nebraska. We'll talk about that momentarily. Also, my wife, Marilyn, has an open mic, and we're talking with her about what it's like to be a swim mom. And Marilyn, let's go to you on that question. What a challenge for you, as we've talked oftentimes and laughed a little bit because it wasn't fun when you were going through it. When did you have to get up in the morning to take him to swim practices?
Well, when he had the morning practices, we had to be out the door, Michael, by 4:30. Mm-hmm. So I probably got up at 4 to make breakfast because he couldn't go without food. You know, he had to need a lot of gas in his tank. Being a sports mom is just what it is. I mean, we were sports people all the way through, and with basketball and volleyball and the whole bit. Swimming's just a different animal because of the unusual regimen. Yeah. So the early mornings, that's how they carve out their culture. Swimming means early mornings, and that's how they build the discipline and the culture. So that means we moms had to build discipline and culture with it, you know.
So, Michael, you're in high school, and you're having to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Then you would leave with mom at 4:30 to get there by 5. How long would you swim in the morning?
Usually about an hour and a half to 2 hours. I mean, we had Monday, Friday mornings at 5 a.m., which looking back is just absolutely absurd. I mean,
it was crazy, wasn't it?
It was good, I guess, for you know, getting better and everything. But, I mean, even in college, we started at 6 a.m. So I was well prepared going to my college athletics because I got an extra hour of sleep twice a week. And I can remember, like, the Sunday nights before, you know, that Monday morning workout where I would be like kind of panicky falling asleep at 9:30 because I knew that no matter what I did, you know, I have to wake up at 4 a.m. And it's just a different kind of animal. I mean, like waking up now at 5:30 is hard, but waking up at 4 is just it's something
it's
else.
It's insane.
Well, and you'd go there and swim and then shower and then go to class, right?
Yeah,
there?
Usually I'd have like an hour off, you know, to go eat. A few of my guy friends, we'd go and get Chick-fil-A or something and then be back at school at 8:05 for start class.
So then you'd go through the normal class regimen, and then at the end of the day, what would happen?
Go back to practice. Yeah, usually I'd try to fit in a nap somewhere during the day. usually by like 10, 11, you know, I'm falling asleep.
And your teachers were very gracious to you
yes,
around that
absolutely.
Time.
They knew he was going to doze
yeah,
off.
Yeah, I had a couple teachers who actually planned on me falling asleep. So they would actually like make sure I had like if it was an off class, they'd tell me and I could go in the back corner and just fall asleep. So that was nice.
So you'd swim in the afternoon for another, what, couple hours?
Usually from like 3:30 to 6 or 6:30 for sure.
Wow. And then you'd come home and then we would feed you and you would try to do some homework and then you would fall asleep.
Yep.
And we were happy when you got your driver's license. It's like, go.
You were grateful
we
for that,
Marilyn,
especially.
4:30, yeah, go.
Yeah, but you kept that routine up. You know, eighth grade, ninth grade, and through all of high school, which is just most remarkable. But Marilyn, you know, we never saw his giftedness in swimming until later on. He swam and had some success, but he always missed those highest cuts and never was at the highest echelon of swimmers, was he?
Well, you won all the awards in high school. I mean, you won the state championships and that kind of thing, but on the college recruiting level, you were late to that game, as you remember. So you barely got recruited that freshman year, but then something happened, you know, between freshman year and sophomore year, and he blew up, you know.
And we need to probably recognize here that for college coaches, they look at times.
Yeah.
And you either have the time or you don't have the time. Michael was just
under barely,
that
yeah.
time they needed to be recruited.
Yeah.
And he finally made a national cut by how many?
0.25 seconds. I think I said it was due to my breakfast that morning. I said, I'm sure I gave him the 0.25 seconds that he needed.
Well, that's what gave him that national cut that gave him just a little bit of attention from colleges.
Right.
Then, Michael, why did you choose the University of Missouri halfway across the nation?
You know, I think when I was getting recruited, I took a lot of value from watching my brother David and how he got recruited. And, you know, the big lesson, I think, in recruiting is go to the place that wants you the most. I mean, yes, where you like the best is extremely important, but you don't want to go somewhere where you just go in and you don't make a big impact. And for me, I wanted to be kind of a wave maker. And when I looked at all my schools, I had four, to be exact, and it was Auburn, UNC, NC State, and Missouri. And really, Missouri was the only place to offer me any scholarship.
And we need to note here that college scholarship money for swimmers, unless you're just the best of the best, isn't much.
Yeah, so Greg Rodenbaugh offered me 15%, won 5%. And then we came back to him and said, I know it's a lot to ask, you know, but if you can say 20%, I will sign right now. And for that, I think when he said that, he gave me the go-ahead, and he's a man of faith and a man of value, and I think he legitimately saw a future in me, too. When he was recruiting me, he came out and flew my senior year in high school and watched me at a practice in October. And I remember him talking to my coach, even my current coach today, David Marsh, out in San Diego, and him saying, you know, this kid has a future. He hasn't even touched what he's done. And then that senior year, as you guys know, in high school was the first time we saw me break out at all. So I signed in November. And then, you know, and being a breaststroker and an IMer, and all of a sudden, in March, April time, my senior year in high school, I'm becoming a freestyler. And that was the first kind of signs we saw me becoming a sprint freestyler. So entering in college, we kind of knew that I had that sprint tendency, and they just developed that into, I guess, me being now on a USA national team level.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I remember it so vividly that in the recruiting process, the other coaches were wonderful. They just looked at the times and said, we can't offer you anything,
but
we
can
give
swim.
You a preferred walk-on.
Walk on.
And I remember you saying to me, Dad, at least they're giving me 20%. That's something that rewards me for all the hard work for all of these years, all the 4 o'clock risings in the morning. This would at least say to me, I got a scholarship. And you then began to build on that. You went to Missouri, and then you had some success as a freshman, not great, but some, and then you blew up between your freshman and sophomore years.
Yeah, to explain what blowing up is, because it was real interesting, I think, because Missouri was just coming into the SEC at that point, which is a really high-level swim conference. You were given a lot of opportunities to swim that you might not have had you gone, say, to Auburn. And because you swam so much, you got better and better. And then all of a sudden, the end of that summer, you were putting down times that put you in that top echelon, right?
Yeah. Well, freshman year was a year where I just got opportunities to be a clinch swimmer on relays. So that was the difference my freshman year was. I just got put on. I didn't make NCAAs individually. So then when I got all these opportunities to anchor all these relays, I got the experience to head into my sophomore year and say, you know, I can do this thing. I know what NCAAs are like. I'm not scared of it anymore. And my sophomore year, I got fifth in the 100 freestyle NCAAs, which was I was the top American in that final. So that set me up for some international success and put me on some radars. And going into that summertime, I had some momentum and ended up making the USA national team in both the 50 free and the 100 free.
And explain to people what that is. The USA national team is the top, what, 6 swimmers in the country?
No, 6 swimmers, yep.
Yeah.
In each event.
In each
so
event,
they all
yeah.
form the national team together. Yeah.
Correct.
And so you actually got some money from that, and it actually allowed you to move forward with the hope that swimming could have some success.
Yeah. Well, didn't get money because I'm still in college, but got more opportunities, I guess, for, you know, to make swimming more financially easier to train, for sure. There's opportunities there. And then we're talking, this is 2015. I'm having a little bit of national success on some radars, and all of a sudden it's the year before the Olympics.
And then you have one event, the Speedo National event in Athens, Georgia, that year right before the 2016 trials, and suddenly you have, at that point, the best time in the nation. I remember your mom calling me. She was down there watching the event, said, you're not going to believe what your son just did. You had a sub-49 100 free, which, again, that point in the history of the swimming, you had the fastest time in the nation.
Sure. I mean, by the end of the summer, that didn't stay. I think I ended up being fourth after that summer, but given that the Olympic team takes top six, all of a sudden, you know, going into the year, succeeded fourth, it looked good.
Well, then you have the Omaha trials in 2016 to try to make the Olympic team, which is just something like your mom and I've never seen before. Anyone who's never been there can't imagine it. It's in Omaha, Nebraska. Talk about the setting.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, for swimming, we say that's the pinnacle of, you know, it. People say that the Olympic trials for the United States is more extravagant than even the Olympic Games is. We don't spare any expense. It's about 20,000 to 25,000 people in the stands from all over the country.
It's a basketball arena where a pool has been put in where the court
exactly.
normally is.
Yep, the CenturyLink Center in Omaha. They build a pool. So it's unlike anything swimmers have ever seen. So you got all these high school athletes, college athletes, and above who have qualified for this trials, and they're all meeting in one place and trying to
There has to be
team.
A trials cut, right? A time you've got to make in order to go to the Olympic trials.
Correct. And usually there's about 1,200 people that go out and try, men and women.
Hmm. And so it's lights and camera. There are all kinds of fireworks that are set off inside the arena itself. National television. You've never experienced anything like that before, and suddenly you're thrust into this arena where Michael Phelps and Ryan Lochte and all the best ever are there next to you.
Yeah, it was definitely something like I'd never experienced before, and all of a sudden I'm in the mix.
And so you've got to make a certain time and be in the top six in the 100 free sprinters in order to make the Olympic team. What was that pressure like?
I think for me, I didn't even know how to you know, deal with that pressure, because it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. I've done meets, I've done hard workouts, I've done the sport for a long time, but when you are on the cusp of achieving something that very few people have, it's hard to wrap your mind around what you're about to do and what you're about to try out for, especially when you really only had about 9 months to really wrap your head around it. So I kind of felt like I was thrown into the mix, but, you know, I was ready, I guess.
There was some conversation that you had a good shot of making the 2016 Olympic team, a lot of conversation around that, and then you get to the day of your meet and your event, and you stand on the blocks, and you get ready to jump in the water as a part of getting to the final eight, who would then decide the top six who would go to the Olympic team. And some things happen to you that have never happened to you before, have not happened to you since, that are just extraordinary and almost unexplainable. And if you didn't have a faith in God, you'd wonder, what in the world is going on? That's what we'll talk about when we come back. I'm David Chadwick. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. If you'd like to hear this program with my son Michael and my wife Marilyn about his swim career, what he's been through, please go to WBT.com, scroll down to the weekend shows, and you can download the podcast from beginning to end by looking for the David Chadwick Show. Again, Michael is my guest today. Marilyn's with me as well, talking about his interesting swim career. Before we left, Michael, you're at the 2016 Omaha Olympic Trials. You are thought to be one of the people who has a great chance of making the team, especially the top six in the 100 free, which means you're a part of the relay team. And then you're on the blocks for your first swim, and what happens?
Well, I mean, it was, like you said earlier, it was like something that never happened before.
And hasn't happened since.
No, it's really never happened. So it's the prelims. I have to make top 16 to make it back that night to go on to the final the next night. And I dive off the block, and my arm slips down. My left arm slips down under the water, and I basically come up out of the water. I breach, and I'm about a body length behind everyone by the start, which in swimming is, you know, everything. If you've ever watched swimming, usually people at my level don't win by body lengths. They usually win by maybe 0.4, 0.2, and I'm a good second behind everyone. So I sprint, I try to catch up. I end up overexhausting myself. I don't swim my race at all. I don't swim the way I've planned that whole year, and finish the race. And I've looked at the clock, and I'd added a full second. So basically get out of the water, hobble over to see my coaches. And I remember just sitting, looking at the screen to see the final results, and I was 18th. So I didn't even make top 16 to go back that night. So my coach picks me up. Greg Rodenball, my Missouri coach at the time, and he picked me up and walked me back to our team area, and you know, just had that crushing defeat where you're just questioning really everything. And it's, and you, I still had the 50 free later that week, but kind of felt like there was no hope at that point. Mm.
So you really didn't make it back to the top 16. You had, interestingly, Ryan Lochte, who had made the top 16, offer his spot for you. And you still needed one more person to do it, and nobody else obviously would we be willing to do that after all of their hard work and trying to get there. So you're at 17th now, on the outside looking in, and all you'd worked for was crushed.
Yeah.
Done.
So a lot of the guys who have already made it, so let's say in the 200 free or the 4IM or something like that, a lot of times they'll scratch the 100 free just because if they've already made the team, they can at a later time maybe throw down at a practice for the games, and the coaches can ultimately decide to put them on the relay. So Michael Phelps would always scratch the final of the 100 free, and Ryan Lochte also did that. I was friends with him at the time, so it does make for a better story to you know, for him to say that he did do that. So to his credit, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, I don't know. But he did do that, and I was 17th. And then, so I had the impossible mission of trying to find someone else to scratch for me. So I looked at the heat sheet and tried to find someone who maybe had already made the team. I found someone, got the courage to walk up to him and ask who he was an Olympic gold medalist, and ask if he would scratch for me. It was the most awkward thing to this day I've ever done. And, you know, he was polite and said he'll think about it and talk to his coach. And so you guys know the story. We had to go to lunch and just, like, sit and wait for my phone call from my coach to see if ultimately someone had scratched. And it was not a feeling I think I'd wish upon us again.
But the U.S. Olympic Committee was so supportive of you. They had kind of invested in you, too. So you had a lot of support of people wanting this to work for you.
Yeah. USA Swimming was a great supporter of me. And I had a lot of conversations with different people that week who just encouraged me to stick in the sport. And
well, they let you do your own trials. Remember, after it was over, they let you go ahead and do your own one-time trial just by yourself, and you put down your best time, and you would have made the top six, and they just wanted to remind you of who you were, right? They wanted to remind you of what you could swim.
Yeah, I mean, the coaches asked me to time trial the next day just to kind of show, because I didn't have the 50 free until Saturday. This is Tuesday at this point, so I had 4 days to really gather myself. So the next day, yeah, I did a time trial and ended up going a time that would have put me in the final with a chance to make the team. So my best time ended up would have been right there to make the team. So the guy ended up not scratching, and I sat at 17th watching a lot of guys that I were really close to go on to make the team. But that's sports.
Well, you picked yourself up. And I remember Greg Rodenbaugh told me later that he just kept saying to you, Michael, there's a plan. There's purpose in this. He's a man of faith. And he kept encouraging you to believe that. And then you went from Omaha then back to Columbia, Missouri. And tell us about what happened next.
So we had a couple options after the meet. So we could either wait until the next morning to drive back, or my coach and I could just drive back from Omaha to Columbia, Missouri. It was about a 7-hour drive. That night, and we were just like, you know what, let's just get back. And so we drove back, got in about 2 a.m. The next morning, I wake up to about, you know, 8 or 9 of my guy friends waking me up and forcing me to go out with them and kind of get me out of my own head a little bit. And we pretty much spent the whole day together. And they just kept reminding me, you know, how much they appreciated me and really helped build me up. And later that night, I actually ended up meeting a girl who kind of like I had liked for a while from afar and always hoped to meet, but never had the opportunity to really come across her. And we met. I annoyed her for a while and asked her if she would finally go on a date with me. And she, her answer was, respectfully, ask me in a month.
Put you off, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, but so, you kept pursuing her.
Yeah, so and she'll get mad at me if I don't explain the story, but I was going home in about 4 days. She was traveling for a wedding, so the timing definitely didn't work out. So we said when we got back to school in a month, we would try to make it work. I think she was hoping that I'd forget, but I didn't, and I got back and asked her again. And I think on the first date, she said, this guy seems all right. And the second day, I think she liked me.
And that gal is now your wife, Cassie Chadwick. And you've been married now for a little over 2 years. And Michael, is it safe to say that had you made the Olympic team, you would have never met Cassie, that you would have never had the opportunity to marry her?
Yeah, I don't think we would have met because we had similar friend groups, but there was a lot of moving pieces with. For example, if I would have made the Olympic team, I would not have gone back to Missouri. So I would have had to ship off to training camp, and I would have gone home immediately to see you guys and spend time celebrating making the team. So there would have been no time to go back to Columbia. And, I think that was the last thing I thought that would happen. So there was a little bit of like a redemption in that story in that, yes, I found my wife. And that's the most important thing. But that senior year, everything coming off Olympic trials, it was almost like I was starting from the groundwork up. And I really had nothing to lose. I was dating a girl that I really liked. And I kind of just, that whole year, just open-handedly walked into it. And my senior year is my best year I've had to date.
Yeah, and that really set the stage for where you are to now, which we'll talk about in just a second. But
well, you know, a senior year, too, just remember the relationships that you had because of that last year. I think everything deepened in that way with your coaches and, of course, Cassie. And then you ended up, I guess, as Missouri's most decorated swimmer ever. How many All-American?
I finished with 22.
Yeah. So, I mean, that, again, the advantage of swimming in a place where they were on the ground floor, you can't ever measure that.
Well, I go back to the seventh grade. You didn't make the basketball team. That's what threw you into the water, which allowed you to experience the swimming success you have. You didn't make the Olympic team. Huge disappointment, but that was the way you met your wife, Cassie. Again, disappointment's God's appointment. Maybe there's a plan that's bigger than what we realize. When there's disappointment in our lives, God's doing something bigger and better for our purposes in his life. So you go back to Mizzou and you start rebuilding, and you graduate again very successfully as Missouri's most decorated swimmer ever. And all of a sudden there opens doors because you now are on the U.S. national team. And there's something that's forming called professional swim leagues. Talk about that.
Yeah, so, okay, so I finished up my senior year. I had some good momentum at that point. Definitely, you know, I got second at NCAAs. Went on that summer. It's 2017. I made the world championship team for the United States, which was in Budapest. And so that was our first opportunity to go overseas and really see what it was like to be a part of all this national team craziness. I mean, we went to Canada, I guess, in December before that, but I think that was small potatoes compared to
Budapest.
World platform at Budapest.
Yeah.
That was
y'all won a gold that year, didn't you?
Yeah. And we did. Yeah, I was on the prelim side of winning the relay. So I think one thing that is part of my story is I've been kind of the relay person for the United States. Which I've enjoyed. For us, we get two athletes to represent us each event. So we have one guy right now who's the best in the world, and we can talk about that further. He's going to be probably the next Michael Phelps. And he would say he's a zone athlete, but yeah, we can talk about that more.
Well, let's do that when we come back on the other side of the break. His name's Caleb Dressel, and he's quite an athlete, quite a swimmer. You've been there right with him all your career, and it's been fun to watch that happen over the last years. And also, let's talk about now your focus 2020, which Omaha trials are coming up again in this last segment, and what you're doing to prepare your heart and your head to keep focusing on your goal to try to make the Olympic team. I'm David Chadwick, and we will be right back.
This is the star. This is your heart. This is the day you were born.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. My son Michael is in studio, along with Marilyn, my wife, talking about his swim career and his focus now on the 2020 Olympics. You know, Michael, when you didn't get on the 2016 team, you've been able to focus now on a professional swim league. And actually, there's something that started recently called the International Swim League that you're a part of. You're a member of the LA Current. Actually, eight teams from all over the world that compete against one another just had their big deal in Las Vegas in December, national television and all. Talk about that.
Well, this International Swim League is relatively new to the swimming world, and I think new to everyone. I think I have a lot of people asking, what is this swim league? And it's being funded privately by a guy who just loves swimming, and he's put up about $25 million to see this league into fruition. And this fall, I traveled to Dallas, Budapest, Washington, D.C., and ultimately they built a pool in the Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago, and we had the final there.
Yeah, it's been a fun thing to watch. The greatest swimmers in the world all competing against one another. Prize money, you're able to kind of make some money out of this deal. And then also, it gives you some ways to continue to have swimming be important, not just one time every 4 years, because internationally, the swim events at the Olympics is the most watched event of all the others, along with gymnastics. And now you have something you can do in between those four-year time periods that gives swimming an elevated status nationally and internationally.
And that's the big question, is how can we make this sport, which everyone seems to enjoy every 4 years, more accessible and easily watchable outside the Olympic Games? And that's what the International Swim League is trying to do, make it more of a team format, so we're competing not just for an individual status but also for a team.
And you and your wife, Cassie, live in San Diego. You're training with Dave Marsh, a former SwimMAC coach here, the Women's Olympic coach in the 2016 Games, a magnificent swim coach. And you have to go through these daily routines, early morning, afternoon, trying to get your body in shape to look now for the 2020 Games.
Exactly. It's hard to believe we're already in 2020, and it's going to be about 6 months until I try out.
Yeah, Marilyn, can you believe that the 2020 Games are here? 4 years ago,
where
the disappointment
in
Omaha, now here we are again.
Yeah. Well, you know, but you've had so many interesting experiences. We've encouraged you, and of course, Cassie's great at this too, but living for the moment, because y'all have had a lot of exciting experiences just traveling and doing what you're doing now. It's not just about the Olympics. You know, you've made enough money to at least pay your bills living in California, which is not easy, but y'all have carved a life out that's so interesting and fun. You've been to places like Budapest, you've been to China, you've been to Korea. We were in Peru with you for the Pan American Games last summer. What a life. I mean, so you've already made the Olympic trials, but there's a life outside of that too, isn't there?
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely. Swimming is kind of just a stepping stone for me. I mean, gosh, who knows how long the Lord's going to have me in the sport. I still enjoy it. Absolutely. And I think this is my wife, Cass, and I talk about this all the time, but this 2020 year is kind of the culmination of everything. I'll be 25, heading into this Olympic trials, and you know, growing up aspiring to be an Olympic athlete, this is where I always pictured this happening, is around this age and trying out for this team that I've wanted to make since I was, you know, first started.
Well, okay. Remember that little sign you put on your wall? I mean, I took it down the other day to save it, and I stuck it on your shelf. But you said you were 10 years old, and you wrote this cute little sign, and it said, "Olympics, here I come." And at age 10, I'm like, yeah, right. But what's so funny is, you know, you actually have been on that path. And so I think I tell parents sometimes there is something about around age 10. A lot of people that do great things in life have that dream spring forth at age 10. I've heard this over and over and over. And so I always tell parents, don't underestimate those childhood dreams. You just never know what's in a child's heart.
Michael, you're now focusing on Omaha. Again, you'll have to try out for the team. You'll go through the same thing you went through 4 years ago. How are you different? And how has your faith really helped you prepare your heart for the Omaha trials in June of this year?
You know, I think one of the things I love about Olympic sports and swimming especially is we look at a four-year cycle. I mean, you look at, and I think I encourage people all the time to look at your, when you look at your life at a four-year cycle, how much life changes in 4 years is unbelievable. And looking back from when I was, you know, in 2012, I was a senior in high school, and the thought of even making an Olympic team, let alone swimming at a high level in college, seemed impossible. And then in 2016, go walk into a meet, some would say expected to make it, and you know, I make a a mistake that 10-year-olds make. And, you know, that cost me that. But then I found my my wife, and then moved forward with, you know, some more success in the pool, and found ultimately what I think I value and what really is important to me. And shockingly, you know, you realize, as important as swimming is, it's not everything in life. I think swimming is, like I said earlier, is a stepping stone, and it's not going to last forever. At some point, I'm going to have to stop swimming, probably because my body will make me stop swimming, and then, you know, we'll try something else. But right now, walking into the Olympic trials in 2020, I mean, gosh, 4 years ago, I was almost a completely different person. I think for many ways, I think if I would have taken that success, I don't know where I would have ran with it, because I don't think I was ready. I don't think God thought I was ready. I think he knew the exact time to declare me. And if that's in swimming, great. I hope I have that success and I can run with it with some momentum and use it for his glory. And who knows if that'll be this year. I sure hope so. But yeah, I mean, now we're 6 months out, and if I keep swimming four years from now, I hope I can look back to 2020 being, wow, I had no idea what I was doing then, you know. And that's kind of what we want in life, I think. And we never want to stop growing. We never want to start working towards who God made us to be. And thankfully, swimming has taught me this four-year experience where I can see that.
So your granddaddy, my dad, used to say all the time, do your best, give God the rest. Is that kind of where you are? You're just going to do your best, but trust God with the outcome?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm a competitor, and I very much want this thing to work out, and I will keep working until my body gives up. But I think, yes, absolutely. You know, the Lord has been so gracious to even give me this gift to begin with, and I think I got to constantly remind me that this is something that is not just by my accord. It was divinely created and designed for me to go on this path and have these experiences. And you know, in 6 months, we'll all see exactly what that looks like.
Well, your mom and I are real proud of you. You've gone through some real trials, and you've continued to move ahead. Marilyn, if you had one piece of counsel for parents out there with kids who've achieved at a fairly high level, what would you say to them, especially about keeping faith as a part of their focus and their goal?
Well, you know, we always, like Michael said, saw that faith was the key. That was the foundation. We never made anything about swimming as far as your foundation went. That's what you do with your life, but that is not what your life is. So I think it's just a daily reminder. It's more about what do you keep in the center, and then what you do with the sport is what's left over.
And Michael, is it fair to say that you would say, I'm a child of God first? That's your identity. Who swims? You're not a swimmer who's a child of God.
Yeah, I mean, we preach identity all the time. I tell people this all the time. Your identity is not what you do in the pool, but it's how you're purpose-driven every single day, and who you are in Christ defines you far greater than any accomplishment that you can possibly have.
Well, we're proud of you, son. Good luck to you this next several months as you prepare for the Olympic trials, and they're said trials for a reason because they try you like nothing else, but keep focusing on the Lord, and when you do, like Jesus said, Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom and all the rest of this stuff happens. Thanks for being with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hey, and everyone, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and might, and love your neighbor as yourself. Those are the two commands that Jesus gives us. If you do those two things, you have a lifetime's worth of work to do. I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Talk with you all next week.